It's 1951, and the chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, sits down at his desk and he writes a letter, a responsum. He writes a letter to a colleague who's the chief rabbi of Petach Tikva. His name is Rav Reuven Katz. Rav Reuven Katz was a well-known rabbinic giant who came from Europe, much like Rav Herzog himself. He was the author of a sefer called Degel Reuven. He had a son when I was in YU. Rav Michal Katz, sefer tzaddik levracha, was one of the old-time, older Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Reuven Katz had a very complicated halachic question. And what do you do? Even if you are a great gaon, you might be a great Torah genius, you're dealing with something which is very difficult. So, you ask. So you phone a friend. So he sends the shaila to Yerushalayim HaKodesh, to the Heilige Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, the gaon. And Rav Herzog responds. The substance of the shaila is not really pertinent for us today, but there's one line in the shaila which is really crucial. And this will set the stage for our fundamental outlook of this entire project that we're going to call the Weekly Torah Controversy. He invokes a line that countless other authors of responsa have given over the years. And this line dates all the way back to the Talmud Yerushalmi. But before I share this line with you, I want to give you just the end of the tshuva, because the end of the tshuva gives you a flavor, it gives you a feeling of the affect, the approach that we're trying to take. Sof Davar, says Rav Herzog. You see here, this is in source one. It's Eben Ezra Chelek Beis Simeon Ches. You should please take a look in what I wrote to you. Ve'imdaitchem hagedola tachriya lahakel. And if you decide, if you conclude that you'd like to be lenient, hareini mitzdarif, I agree with your conclusion, and I would be lenient in this case. Ve'imtachlitu lahamlich ba'od rav bal horam aforsam. If you should choose to ask someone else's opinion, this is a very weighty question. I don't want to impose my views. If you want to ask others, that's totally fine. You should tell them that my opinion is to be lenient. What is Rav Herzog conveying here? What is the approach that he takes to this shaila? It's one word. It's anava. It's humility. Rav Herzog says, you have such a difficult question. My opinion is not the only opinion that counts. And I'm not even insisting that my opinion is necessarily the right opinion. This is my opinion. But you could certainly ask others, and I will agree to be lenient, but it's not about me. I don't know everything. Rav Herzog in this tshuva uses a line that really captures this feeling. He says, "Mi yachnis rosho." Who should put their head? Bein shnei horim, between two mountains. This is the first assumption that we have to make. Well, we're going to go on this journey of studying episodes, troubling, complicated, difficult episodes, controversies. We have to understand who we are. So whenever we're going to look at an issue, we're going to look at it through this lens, the lens of anava, of humility, of understanding our limitations of our perspective, of our knowledge. Who are we to have an opinion? This comes from the Talmud Yerushalmi, you see in source number two. Shalu es Rabbi Yeshua. They asked Rabbi Yeshua, B'nei Tzoros Mahim. What do we do about the children of Tzoros? Tzoros, you have a person, a man, who is married to a woman, and they have no children, Rahman al-Itzlan. So that woman, if the man has a brother, would be connected to the brother in a process that would require, it's called a zika, it would require either chalitza or yibum. So there's a whole masechta about this. It's called masechta Yevamos. And there's also a big discussion, a complicated discussion. What if you have a tzara, another wife? So there's a lot of discussion about this. And there is a huge machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding a particular case of tzara, because sometimes you can have the brother-in-law who is supposed to marry the woman whose husband passed away. They may have a previous relationship. Maybe they are brother and sister. Maybe they are mother-in-law and son-in-law. Maybe there's a lot of, you know, family connections that could exist between this woman who's supposed to marry this guy. Right, so whatever exactly the case is, it depends on, they could be there from different fathers, could be there from different mothers, there's a lot of discussion, that's not the point right now. But this woman is an erva to this man. Then there's another wife who's a tzara, a second wife, but she's not an erva. What happens to her? So the Gemara has a huge, huge machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about this case. Now, mind you, the stakes are very high, because for someone to marry an erva is an iser, a potential of an iser karis. To marry someone who is supposed to do yibum and didn't do yibum, that would be an iser lav. But these are, the Gemara has, this is the end of the first parak in Yevamos, has a ton, which is not our topic today. But I bring it to your attention because when they ask this Shiloh of Rabbi Yeshua, he says, Amar lahem, he says, Hare ata machnisin es roshi. You are putting my head bein shnei haharim hagvoim, between two giant mountains, bein divrei Beis Shammai ubein divrei Beis Hillel, bishvil sheyaritu esmochi, that they should crush my skull. You have to recognize when there is a controversy of this magnitude, a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about Saras Erva, and for Yibum and all these particulars, which is very naughty, you're putting me in a position to be crushed. So it's important for us when we start this discussion to understand we're not looking to put our head between two mountains. That's the first thing we need to remember. That's number one. Then there's the second issue. We're going to talk about controversies. Well, what is a controversy? So according to the dictionary website, a controversy is a prolonged public dispute, debate, or contention. A disputation concerning a matter of opinion, or a contention, a strife, or an argument. What's the affect that goes with this? It has a little bit of a sting to it, something negative. But the second thing to know when we approach this issue is that in halacha, in hashkafa certainly, and in Torah in general, differing views are celebrated. Kifati shifol tzela, the Gemara Darshan's in Sanhedrin, it's like you take a chisel and you smash a rock and you get a lot of different fragments. So that's the way we understand Torah. It fragments into a lot of different ways. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga, you see here on source number 3, Baal asufos, these are tamidei chachamim, sheyoshvin asufos, they sit groups and groups, Va'oskin ba'Torah, and they learn Torah, halalu matamin v'halalu matarim. These say that this particular case is tamei, and this case is tar. Totally different views. Shema yomar adam, fifth line, how could somebody could say, how can I learn? Hechani lomei Torah me'at tamad lomar kulam nitnu me'roa echad. They're all given from the same shepherd. The Rebbe Shalom gave us a Torah that is multifaceted. And so there are going to be different opinions, and that's something that we celebrate. The notion of machlokes, take a look. Some of you are familiar with the Mishnah, source number 4. Kol machlokes shisha l'shem shamayim, sofa. If you have a machlokes which is for the sake of heaven, the end of that machlokes is, does the Mishnah say the end of the machlokes is for it to be resolved peacefully? No. It says sofa l'hiskayim. It will remain. It will endure. The argument is going to keep going and going. Fascinating. So this is the second issue, which is that not every dispute that we're going to come across should ever be resolved. It may just remain for good reason. It's the nature of machlokas. Now the truth is that each of these topics really needs their own treatment. This is just a quick thumbnail list of caveats before we get started. So the first issue of anava, that needs a full treatment. This issue about the nature of machlokas, the origins of machlokas, the importance of machlokas, how a person should be involved in machlokas, what's l'shem shamayim, what's not l'shem shamayim, that also needs a whole treatment, but that's not for today. This is just the Rosh Prakim, we would say. When we talk about machlokas, and we talk about differing views, sometimes the dissenting view is completely rejected. It's totally false, and it's let go from the Beis Medrash discussion. But the Gemara tells us, and if we think about the greatest disputants we've already referenced, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that's probably, the Gemara says that was the explosion of Machlokas for a variety of reasons, which we're not going to talk about today, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they had these very bitter disputes. And the Gemara tells us in Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, take a look. Om Rabbi Abba, Omar Shmuel, you see in the bracket? Sholo Shonim Nechleku Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. For 3 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued about a particular issue. Halalu Omer Halacha Kamosenu. One group said, Beis Shammai said, the Halacha follows us. Halalu Omer Beis Hillel said, the Halacha follows us. Yatsa Baskol V'Omra, the Baskol, the heavenly voice came out and said, Eilu Ve'elu. Divrei Elokim Chayim. These and these are the words of the living God. V'halacha k'Beis Hillel. But the normative practice follows Beis Hillel. There are multiple perspectives. Not everything, by the way, is included in Elu De'elu, as we alluded to before. If you want, there's an excellent, very important, fundamental article in tradition about Elu De'elu by Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig. There's a lot more to say about this topic. But the Ritva says that when the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the Torah, he gave us the Torah with multiple perspectives. That's why the previous Gemara tells the story that Sumchus, who was a student of Rabbi Meir, on every issue, third line, Al Kol Davar V'Davar Shel Tumah, on every question of Tumah and Tahara, he said, Arbom Ushmona Tame Tumah, 48 perspectives of Tumah, Val Kol Davar V'Davar Shel Tahara, Arbam Ushmona Tamei Tahara, 48 perspectives of Tahara. There are different ways of looking at even the same case of Tahara. And the Gemara says elsewhere that you would have one Chacham who could look at the same issue from both perspectives, Tumah and Tahara. So the notion that it's got to be one way is totally not true. When it comes to practice, the Gemara says, halacha k'beis hillel. That's how we observe. But when it comes to learning, when it comes to a kiyum of Talmud Torah, of appreciating, if you're within these confines of elu ve'elu, so then there's merit to studying both. So we're not looking, during this journey, during this limud, we're not looking for who's right. That's not the point. We're looking to learn, to understand, to be enlightened, to be closer to the Dvar Hashem of Elu Ve'elu. And even within those disputes, there's a how. Now, not always did everyone engage in this how exactly this way, as we will see, but that's certainly the model. Because Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, they argued bitterly for so many years, and who would want to put their head between those two litigants? But the Gemara says in that discussion in Yuma, which was so sensitive about who could marry whom, the Gemara has a discussion about whether or not Beis Shammai really followed their opinion or they never followed through. In practice, they just learned this way. The Gemara has a really interesting line here in source number 6. The Gemara says, Yivamus, really, at this stage in the Gemara, la'olam asu. Really, they did their opinion. They followed their ruling. And yet, both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai married each other's families. How did that work? The Gemara says, "Demodai lehu uparshi." They would inform the other one, "You should know this young man and this girl, you should know they come from a family that, according to your opinion, is not acceptable." Says the Ritva, not on this Gemara, but half a daf later, the Ritva in his commentary on Yevamos, Rabbi Yom Tov from Seville, very, very important Rishon in Spain, the 14th century, he says this was because they respected each other, because they appreciated each other, they loved each other. And so, even though they were very strong in their own opinion, but they recognized that for somebody else, it's not good for you. And so because of my appreciation for you, I don't say, "Oh, you know, my opinion is so right, I'm going to undermine your opinion and I'm going to set your daughter up with a guy from my opinion." No. They would just say, "You know what? This is not a good shidduch for you. It's not a good shidduch." Because it came from a sense of mutual respect. So now we could start thinking about when we talk about a controversy. If we come to this limud, number one, with a sense of anava, with humility. Number two, with understanding that there is value in machlokas. You know, Rav Kook has a line, because it relates to this last line. The pasuk says, "Talmidei chachamim v'rav shalom banayach." The Gemara has a drash in brachos. "Talmidei chachamim marbim what? Shalom ba'olam." Talmidei chachamim increase shalom. They increase. Have you ever been to a Beis Medrash? They increased peace. You ever see what goes on over there? So Rav Kook says, you know why it's Mar B'Shalom? Because when you have more perspectives on an issue, you have Shleimut. You have Shleimus. You have a whole perspective rather than a narrow perspective. So Machlokas, if it's L'Shem Shemayim, it's laudable. And if you're within the confines of Elu ve'Elu, both sides have merit. And the last is that we want to foster and appreciate, for our own takeaway, a sense of Ava and Shalom and Reus. So one of the Achronim, I think it was Rebbe Yonasan Ebeshitz, he suggests one way to tell whether something is Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim or not, is whether, when the argument is over, are the people able to get along on a personal level. So you can have a chavrusa where one party is very heated in his opinion and the other party is very heated, but when they finish the Gemara, when they finish learning, they go have lunch together and they have a good time. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they fought bitterly, and yet they had this positive relationship. The Gemara says on Amud Beis that there were other arguments that they had where they managed to get along on a personal level. It's not always the case, but this is something that we want to strive for. So when we think about our attitude toward these controversies, these are the values that we want to come back to each and every week. So welcome to our journey. And let's get started with controversy number one. This too could span many weeks. Each of these controversies, they're very involved. In March of 2006, if you were a reader of the newspaper Yated Ne'eman, you would open the newspaper and you would find the latest installation of a big-time controversy. And you would have thought, wait a minute, this controversy has already been put to bed. But no, it has not. Because some controversies, not only do they flare up repeatedly, sometimes they reappear in new iterations. Or you thought they were taken care of, but they weren't. How often is it that you have a ban, a chirim, on the same book twice? That's what you have in front of you on the page, right here in source number 7. Das Torah, a letter signed by some of the greatest luminaries of our generation, Rav Eliashiv, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, Rav Ari Leib Shtaiman, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, and others. A ban on, it's hard to see in the Xerox, I realize next time I want to use a better printer, it's a little hard to see on the Xerox, on what is put in quotation marks, Beis Vav Chaf. What is Beis Vav Chaf? What does that sound like? Buch, exactly. In Hebrew, what would you call that? A sefer. But if you're going to put something in Chayrim, you will not even give it the legitimacy of being called a sefer. You're going to call it a book, in quotation marks. This book includes what it says here in the bold Divrei Hashpala Chamurim, significant insults. Divrei Zilzul B'Yizayon V'Hotzo Hashemra. Words of denigration and mocking, and Hotzo Hashemra, spreading lies on several Gedolei Hador of the previous generation. What is the name of this book? You see it in front of you. And this is the picture of the Mahadura Misukenis, the improved edition, which is now also in Chayrim, called Making of a Gadol, by the late author, Talmud Chacham, Rav Nosson Kamenetsky, Nathan Kamenetsky, the son of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the great Rosh Hashiva, Zecher Tzadok V'Kadosh Livracha. So this book, The Making of a Gadol, created a huge controversy. The new edition takes out certain pieces, but despite making certain changes, it was still now subject to this new ban. Now, the particulars of this ban and how it came about and the backstory of it is interesting, but it's mostly historical and it's not for us today. I don't want to really spend our year studying history, but some of the history is important. If you're interested in this, there is a fascinating lecture, so I listened to a piece of it. Rav Nosson Kamenetsky Zatzal himself spoke shortly after this. It's on YU Torah. If you search Ban on Making of a Gadol, you will find the lecture that he gave in a shul, I think it was called Beth El, in Borough Park, shortly after this, to explain how a lot of times these kinds of bans come about because there are henchmen and kanoim and zealots who are making trouble. They're not necessarily the product of the people who sign them, or sometimes these bans are signed but then released without the permission of the authors. Whenever you see a ban, you need to scratch the surface. You need to figure out who wrote it, what they knew, did they really authorize it? Because a lot of times people are running around with bans. It's not so simple. So that's just an important caveat. If you want more on this, listen to the lecture that he gave. He also wrote a book on this called The Anatomy of a Ban, where he describes the back and forth that he had with letters with Rav Eliashiv and Sefer Tzadok V'Kadosh Livracha and others. It's an interesting parsha. But this ban was a huge controversy. And this is the double ban. The second, when he tried to fix the first time. What did he write? So he wrote a book of stories. What began as research about the world that his father came from Slabodka, became an exploration of that world, not just of his father's life and legacy, but all the whole Torah milieu in Europe that was lost in the war, that was before. And some of the little vignettes, the snippets that he records from interviews that he did with different people over a 15-year period, include comments about some later great rabbinic luminaries that could be considered controversial, that maybe they read Russian literature. And so the question became, how do we portray these Torah giants? So you have two views. If you look, take a look on the next page, this is where you have, he gives you the left column. I came across a striking disagreement between two famous brothers on the subject of stories about great men of previous generations. Rev. Shimon Schwab, defined in his selected writings, defines the difference between history and storytelling, in that the first must be truthful and unsparing of even the failings of the righteous. Rev. Schwab asserts eloquently that a realistic historic picture will reveal inadequacies which will rightfully make a lot of people angry, and that no ethical purpose to serve by preserving such a picture. He contends that we must, quote, put a veil over the human failings of our forebearers and glorify all of the rest, which is great and beautiful. In other words, he favors storytelling over history. He coins an adage, we do not need realism, we need inspiration from our forefathers. The author's brother, Reb Mordechai, has a different tack. Top of the next column, later in the piece. Talking about the book, The Musar Controversy. The author, Musar adherent Rav Dov Katz, tells how, quote, many opinions were heard, quote, by him, that we should avoid the entire parsha, the entire affair. But several Musar personalities, including Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg and Rav Chatzkel Sarna, insisted not only that he should write about the controversy, but, as Rav Sarna put it, that he set down in writing the full affair without omitting any detail, be what it may. I concede humbly that I have followed not Reb Shimon Schwab's prescription, but Reb Sarna's, and I've portrayed events and people fully and honestly. So this becomes a subject of controversy. How do we portray the Torah giants to whom we aspire, to whom we look to be modeling ourselves after? There is an article, if you want more on this, a very interesting, important article in the 8th volume of the Torah Umada Journal by my teacher, Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, called Facing the Truths of History, of how we portray Torah figures. So this is one facet of the conversation. This could be a whole presentation of itself. This is related, and I'm going to lump these together, it's not exactly the same, but it's related to another controversy around the same time, at the beginning of the 2000s. This, and the original Making of a Gadol was published in 2002. The second band came in the second edition in 2006. But in the early 2000s, there was another debate about a different issue, but it's a related issue. The debate became known as the Pulmus, the controversy of Tanakh Begova Ha'inayim. Gova Ha'inayim means the height of your eyes. And this debate was spread for the public in a newspaper, a very important newspaper, which is now defunct, but it was found in the 1930s, founded by Rav Meir Berlin, called Hatzofeh. Anybody here ever hear of the newspaper Hatzofeh? A couple of hands. Hatzofeh was probably the most important publication, mouthpiece, of the Mizrahi community, the religious Zionist community, over the course of the 20th century. And you had many different articles and interviews and important things that were shared in Hatzofeh. So in the early 2000s, the pages of Hatzofeh, which you see the masthead here on the page, it was on fire. It was mamish on fire. Articles written back and forth, and some of the language is very sharp. One of the publications, you could call it. You see it on the page here. It's called Tzadik Ve'Emunaso Yechye. It's a book. It was a kuntres published by the students of Rav Tzvi Tau. Rav Tau, should live and be well, he's the Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva called Har Hamor, which is a breakaway from Yeshivat Merkas Harav. Rav Tau is a long-standing student of the late Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. And Rav Tau wrote a book about this issue with a response from on the bottom you see here, from Rav Amnon Bazak, from the Tanakh teacher called in an Alon Shvut Bogrim, in an article called Yesharim Darchei Hashem et Tzadikim Yelchubam. You see, this is mostly just Roshi Prakim, because if we were to go back and forth on each of these issues, it would take, you know, this controversy alone, Tanakh Begovainayim, is about, I don't know, 3-4 months. So we'll just go with the cursory overview, which is, how do you study Tanakh? How do you look at the episodes in Chumash or in Navi that are portrayed according to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, which we will translate now as the simplest primary reading, because the word pshat also, it's not so clear what that means. Does it mean the literal interpretation, or does it mean the primary interpretation? That's a good question. But what does it say about Reuven in the Chumash? What does it say about David in Tanakh, and what does it say about them in the Gemara or the Medrash? And so how we learn biblical stories of biblical heroes, of our Avos HaKadoshim or Avi Mahos. How do we look at these stories? This became a huge, huge debate, which already has origins in Europe. Rabbi Schachter, he shared with me, I didn't include it here because it's just too much stuff, there was a poem that was written by a secular Jewish person in a Yiddish publication in Europe, where he describes Hagar and Yishmael, the episode of Hagar and Yishmael. And it describes it in commonplace terms, which you could imagine how that would be reported or portrayed by somebody who doesn't revere the Torah Kedosha and looks at an episode of Avram taking a woman and sending her out with her child, who's then, you know, deathly ill with a chemas mayim, lechem v'chemas mayim. And to that there is a strong, fierce rebuke that was published in Yiddish at that time. It was later republished in the Jewish Observer by the late Gaon Rav Aharon Kotler Zecher Tzadik V'kadosh Livracha, the Kletzke Rosh Yeshiva, who later became, after he escaped Europe in 1941, he became the founder of Beis Medrash Gavoa in Lakewood. He says, you can't speak like that. And so a piece of this was published, you see in the next, in source number 8, in the next Mar Makom, in his work that was published posthumously. This is the collection of his drushos. There also is Mishnas Rav Aharon, the teachings of Rav Aharon in Halacha, in Gemara. He says, Kishinigashim le'inyan Yitzchak, Yishmael v'Yitzchak, when we look at the issue, the episode of Yishmael and Yitzchak, Bahasagos v'ashkafel shel anashim regilim, with the perspectives of regular people, ubefrat b'dor hazeh, and certainly in our generation, ef sharlitos, you could mistake shahaisakan, that there was here just an argument between two women about the rights of their children. Osir lahalo zos aladas, you cannot think that. Umachshava zu hikfira mamish, that thought is absolute heresy to think that. No way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself tells Avram, listen to what Sarah says. So this can't simply be a squabble between two women. More so, and this is more fundamental, it's more important than that. Ubechlal, line number 5. Maisa avos, shekfisha amarnu hayu yisonos labinyan am Yisrael va'olom kulo. The actions of our forefathers that we explained earlier are the foundations of our nation and the entire world. Lo yachlu lios mushpa'im hashpa kolshi. They could not have been influenced in any way, minetios v'ritzonos atzmiyim, from their personal interests. It's impossible. We have to understand. Ilu, next line, skip ahead to the underline. Ilu aya pagam kolshu ba'avos. If there was any lacuna, any pagam, any blemish, v'yizeh pagam dak min adak, even the most thinnest of thin, ha'isa kol mitzios am Yisrael acheres, our whole nation would be different. Rav Aharon Kotler says, you cannot consider even for a moment any flaw in the Avos HaKadoshim. And yet, on the opposite side of this controversy is Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, who looks at a later episode in Bereishis, the raising, the rearing of Yaakov and Esav, and how Esav ends up where he does. Rav Hirsch says something astounding. I do not know if Rav Aharon Kotler ever saw this piece, and if he did, what he thought of it. But Rav Hirsch says, a child must be brought up, al pi darko, educate him to the one great goal according to his own unique way, in keeping with his potential. To attempt to educate a Yaakov and an Esav together in the same classroom, in the same routines, and in the same manner, to raise both of them for a life of study and contemplation will inevitably mean the ruin of one of the two. Next paragraph. It's Rav Hirsch, not me. Had Yitzchak and Rivka delved deeply into Esav's nature? Had they asked themselves at an early stage how even an Esav with the strengths, skills, courage latent with him and could be harnessed for God's service in the future, Gibor, would not have become a Gibor Tzayid, a mighty hunter, but a true Gibor Lefnei Hashem? Says Rav Hirsch, but this did not happen. Vayigdulu Hana'orim, only after the boys had grown into men, was everyone surprised to discover that the two brothers from the same womb, who had been given the same care, the same upbringing, and the same schooling, were so different in their natures and actions. So this is a great controversy. How do we portray Gedolim? And how do we understand the stories of Tanakh? Not the same, but certainly related. And the reason why we are thinking about this today, it's because it has to do with this week's parsha, with Parshas Noach. Pasuk tells us, Perek Vav, Pasuk Tes, Eila told us Noach, these are the generations of Noach. Who was Noach? Noach Ish Tzadik. Noach was a righteous man. Not only that, Tomim Hoya Bidorosov. He was whole in his generation. Es Hu Elokim His Halach Noach. Noach walked with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Could you imagine if someone said that about us? How would that feel? Seriously, right? You would take that, if anybody was auctioning off that for an epitaph, right? It would be amazing. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself, L'Netzach Netzachim in the Torah Kedosha, immortalizes Noach as a tzaddik tamim, Hoya B'Dorosav, and that Es Halokim is Halach Noach. It's mind-blowing. And yet, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, well, you know, why does it have to say Bidorosov in his generation? So Rashi adds a phrase to that Gemara. The Gemara presents two sides, and Rashi, he couches the Gemara's Machlokas in Sanhedrin with the following language. Yesh me rabosenu dorshim oso l'shevach. There are those of our sages who study and learn and understand this as a praise for Noach. Skip to the end of the line. V'yesh dorshim bedorosav. And there are those who darshim in his generation oso l'gnai. Yesh dorshim oso l'shvach, v'yesh shedorshim oso l'ganai. If you say he was praiseworthy, so the first approach in the Gemara Sanhedrin is, oh, imagine if he would have been in a generation of tzaddikim, what an influence it would have been on him even more. So he was a righteous person, even though he lived in Rachmana Litzlan, such a debased, low society. So it's a great praise. But this phrase, Yesh Dorshim Oso Lekanai, there are those who look at him and they take this reference as a dig, as a gnai. Noah, the Pasuk says about him, Ish Tzadik. And yet, you have a controversy. Not so simple. Wasn't you think he was a tzaddik? Nah, he wasn't such a tzaddik. Because if he would have been in Avraham Avinu's generation, he would have been, quote, lo hoya nechshav l'klum. So what's the pshat in this? Obviously, Chazal are sensitive to every nuance in the Chumash. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us an expression of godliness that we need to mine on every level. So they, Chazal, in Drushas, they look at every word and they say, Bidorosav, in his generation. So they want to figure out, what is the message of that word? I get that. So why the controversy? Why the debate? Why Yesh Drosh and L'Shvach and Yesh Drosh and L'Gnai? And the truth is, if we can lump all these three controversies together, I can understand the Rav Shimon Schwab approach, which is that our goal in life is to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world, to be those people who are Eso Elokim Hisalech us. And to do that, we want to look at greatness, and we want to mimic that. We want to follow that. So what's the point of raining on Noach's parade? What could be the justification for Rav Hirsch's approach? For Chazal saying that maybe Noach, you thought he was Ish Tzadik, Tamayi, but the Rosh Hashanah, don't get too carried away. What are we meant to learn from this? So Rav Hirsch himself says, I want to explain it to you. Because earlier in Sefer Bereishis, we have a different episode that Rav Hirsch opines upon. And that is the episode of Avraham descending to Egypt because of the famine and presenting his wife as, that's right. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadok HaKadosh Livracha, said once, if he were to be left on a desert island and he could only have one sefer with him, he would take the Ramban al HaTorah, Nachmanides. The Ramban for Rav Lichtenstein and his commentary on the Chumash represents, in some ways, imagine, the only sefer he would take is this sefer. It represents the culmination of the work, the spiritual achievement of a man who is a Kabbalist and a physician and a halachist and a poet, everything. And the Ramban says in his Pirush that Avraham Avinu was chata chi gadol b'shkaga. He erred a great error by mistake. B'shkaga. It was a shogi, but it was an error. So Rav Hirsch looks at this and he says, I'm not sure, because he's going to offer a different approach, which we're not going to spend the time on today. He says something. Yet even if we were incapable of explaining the strange events in this story, even if we were forced to conclude, as the Ramban concludes, Avram Avinu, Chota Chet Gadol B'Shgaga, which Rav Hirsch is going to offer an alternative, goes six lines down, nevertheless, where the dash is, none of this would perplex us. The Torah does not seek to portray our great men as perfectly ideal figures. It deifies no man. It says of no one, here you have the ideal. In this man, the divine assumes human form. It does not set before us the life of any one person as the model from which we might learn what is good and right, and what we must do and what we must refrain from doing. When the Torah wishes to put before us a model to emulate, it does not present a man who is born of dust. Rather, God presents himself as the model. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the model. The Torah, skip down, is not a, quote, anthology of good deeds. It relates events not because they are necessarily worthy of emulation, but because they took place. The Torah does not hide from us the faults, errors, and weaknesses of our great men, and this is precisely what gives its stories credibility. The knowledge given us of their faults and weaknesses does not detract from the stature of our great men. On the contrary, it adds to their stature and makes their life stories even more instructive. Had they been portrayed to us as shining models of perfection, flawless and unblemished, we would have assumed that they had been endowed with a higher nature, not given to us to attain. Had they been portrayed free of passions and inner conflicts, their virtues would have seemed to us merely the consequence of their loftier nature, not acquired by personal merit, and certainly no model we could ever hope to emulate. Take, for example, the Anava, what we started with, the humility of Moshe. Had we not known that he was capable of also In Rav Hirsch's words, flying into a rage, we would have assumed that his humility was an inborn trait not within our capacity to emulate. It is precisely his outburst, Shimun HaMorim, listen, the rebellious ones, that lends his humility its true greatness. We thus infer that he acquired humility through hard work, self-control, and self-refinement, and that we are all obligated to emulate him, since it is within our capacity to do so. Skip down one sentence. Let us learn from our great teachers of Torah, among whom the Ramban certainly is one of the most outstanding, that we must never attempt to whitewash the spiritual and moral heroes of our past. They do not need our apologetics, nor would they tolerate such attempts on our part. It's not taking away from their greatness. It's making their greatness more accessible to us. We just lost someone who I had the privilege of meeting and learning from, being a student of his, Rav Moshe David Tendler, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. A great man, fiery champion of Torah, biology expert. I took him to medical ethics and Yeshiva College. He was the son-in-law of the late great Gaon and Tzadik Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. So he told many stories about Rav Moshe. And how Rav Moshe, even though maybe some would tell stories that present him as being superhuman, but he said, yes, Rav Moshe had enormous patience, but Rav Moshe told him that he worked on that over a lifetime, that he wasn't born a saint. I think they say from Rav Huttner that he wasn't in favor of some of the contemporary biographies that were written about certain Gedolim, because it makes them seem like they were born as saints. No one is a saint. It makes them feel out of reach to us. Says Rav Nelson Kamenetsky at the end of that long introduction. In summary, in number 13, let's go back to where we started today with Anava. We cannot judge and evaluate the individual acts of Torah personages of former generations. For the same reason can we resolve our problems in the particular ways they resolve theirs. To paraphrase the words of the prophet, Ki lo machshavo sehem, ki gavu shamayim me'aretz, kein gavu drachehem midarcheinu. It's a paraphrase. We can't really understand their milieu. We can't understand the situation that they were in, and it's challenging to extrapolate. We're not on their level. Let's go back to where we started with Anava. When we read these stories, we have to understand we're not them, not the Gedolim of Europe, and certainly not the Avos HaKadoshim or David HaMelech. Yet, there is much for us to learn from them, not perfection, which needs no model and which everyone must try to achieve in accordance with his own personality, but their motives and ideals, their truthfulness and wholesomeness, their charity and love of Torah. These serve as beacons on the paths of our lives. And the truth is that this is really the goal of both sides of the controversy. Those who protest against any depictions of Gedolim or any understandings of the Avos or the Imos of the Amude Olam as having flaws, they're doing so because they want us to be our best selves and not misunderstand. But those who actually present the flaws are doing so for the same reason, so that we should learn from it. Noach, the Pasuk says he was an Ish Tzadik. So why? What can we learn from someone coming along and saying, ah, Yesh Dorshin L'Gnai? What can we learn from that? Says the Zohar HaKadosh, this is the Hebrew translation of the Zohar, Bo ure'e ma bein Moshe l'achirim. Let's look at what the difference is between Moshe and others. Moshe kishomar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu va'ata hanicha li ve'ese oscha l'goy gadol et v'chei ra'igel. Moshe Rabbeinu was faced with a crisis. The Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, we're going to let the Jewish people go. You are going to be the foundation of the new people. It's going to be you and your family. Omar Moshe, Bishvil Tovasia Pratis Ezov Dinam Shal Yisrael, for my own personal pursuit, we're going to abandon the Jewish people. Vayachal Moshe, he begs, he pleads, he challenges. Says the Zohar HaKadosh, Noach, Mikivan Sha'omalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sheyatzel Oso B'teva, when God said to him, build an ark and take your kids. Lo bikesh rachmim al ha'olam. We don't find that Noach pleaded to the Ribbono Shel Olam to help the people, to turn them around. Venevdu, and they were lost. Yesh darshan l'kanai, it's not chas v'shalom that we're a somebody that we're going to sit back and psychoanalyze or tear down anyone. Not in our own generation. Is that a way to live? Is that the derech of the Ribbono Shel Olam? And certainly not of the Tanakh. Certainly not of the great people. But the Torah does it because they want us to learn something. That when you look at Noach, you can't just say, oh, he was perfect. Because he wasn't perfect according to the Darshan L'Gnai. Because when we're faced with a situation like Noach, when we're faced with a culture around us that's falling to pieces, we should dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam to help people see the light and not let it all be destroyed. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives us this little hint of Bedorosav according to the Zohar HaKadosh so that we should learn this lesson for ourselves. So when we think about this controversy, when we think about the differing perspectives that are at hand, we need to remember what is the goal, what's the takeaway for us. And that is to continuously look for ways to be inspired, to enhance our own spiritual journey, which is hopefully going to be the goal of this entire series.